So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming today, this morning. As you know, starting in January and through June, we sort of have a theme that we're doing our best as a community to all practice together, and then in the retreats and the intensives and the weekly talks, whether by me or other members of the community, to tie everything in. And what this general theme is, for these 6 months is all about kind of moving away from self-centeredness, from selfishness, from a life that is totally centered on me, and really being aware of how that functions in our life and how that dominates us and skews our thoughts, and therefore our feelings, our relationships, etc. And at the same time begin to experience how the opposite of that opens us up to greater feelings of love and compassion, all the whole positive emotions that arise when we really live life selflessly, including a greater sense of connection. Interconnection. And so I know Andrew gave a talk last week here, and so just to kind of bring that thread forward, if you would say the pith of your talk last week, what you would have liked people who attended your talk to be practicing or being aware of during the week would have been what, Andrew?
Well, the pith would be that in our childhoods and over the course of our lifetimes, we develop holding patterns within our bodies, ways in which our energy is constricted in our bodies, and that one way to identify these constrictions, which you might say are part of the ego, is in meditation or in other types of body awareness, to use our breathing to look deeply within our bodies, and to use our breathing to identify and begin to let go of these holding patterns and constrictions.
So good. And the reason I bring that up, because, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, I think it's very important that we don't come to our Florida CUNY Mindfulness Practice Center every Sunday, you know, in our traditional way of attending a sermon, where we kind of segment it, isolate it into an interesting, meaningful experience, and then return to our daily lives and have no remembrance of what that was about. And then next week, next Sunday, we begin all over again. That is not in Buddhism. A Dharma talk, whether whoever is giving it, is meant to awaken us, to transform us, and it can only do that if we are willing to reflect on it. We hear it, and then hopefully, if there are points in it that are meaningful, salient, relevant, significant, etc., to our personal condition, that therefore we reflect on it in that way. And if we reflect on it and it seems to have relevance to our personal lives, and each of us lead a personal life, then we perhaps have begun to do what Andrew suggested, which is as we go through the day, we are more in touch with our body. In our meditations, we are more in touch with our body. And seeing that many of these he calls them holding patterns, or many of these reactive patterns, emotional patterns from life, childhood, etc., are held in physicality, in physical sensations, in parts of our body. And so we are attentive to that in our mindfulness practice, and we are liberating ourselves. Again. It's all, you know, in Buddhism we practice mindfulness so we are able to see clearly what's going on. We practice insight so we understand more deeply the source of the problem, we could say. But if we don't go about a process of healing or transformation or changing, you know, it's like, so what? You know, we may be able to talk quite knowledgeably about all the things that are wrong, you know, with our car, but if we never bother to fix it, you know, all our knowledge is for naught. And so many of us have great insight and understanding of our stuff and our conditions and our neuroses and our childhood and our wounds, et cetera, et cetera, which is a good for a starting point. But if that's not in the service of liberation, cessation of suffering, the ending of these conditioned patterns from continually to condition our current experience, then it's really all for naught. So we have to, again, the Buddha is very clear from his teaching because he arose even 2,500 years ago, 2,600 years ago, in a culture that was saturated with philosophy, saturated with morality, saturated with meditative techniques. You know, our culture is infancy compared. And yet he said very clearly, if it is not about the cessation of suffering, then it really is not a valid spiritual teaching. And he would say that, I teach only the cessation of suffering. I don't teach philosophy, I don't teach morality, I don't teach insight, I don't teach meditation, I don't teach trance states, I don't teach anything just unto themselves. It is all in the service of awakening, awakening from suffering. So this is very important that we understand that simply hearing the teachings and reading the teachings and even sometimes practicing the teachings, but sometimes we practice the teachings like there's something outside us. There's something for us to get good at. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, I got to get good at this. I got to get my concentration good. I got to get my mindfulness good. I got to get my my loving kindness practice good. You know, my compassion practice good. You know, I got to really cultivate all these things. As if they are something separate from life. So if we are cultivating calming the mind, we want to do that so we can, in our daily life, live with a calm mind. If we are cultivating loving kindness and compassion, it's because in our daily life, we are more compassionate to human beings, you know, real human beings. Not just conceptual human beings that we visualize, but, you know, those real people that annoy the hell out of us. Those are the ones that we need to be practicing loving kindness to. If we're practicing looking deeply and understanding our wounds from childhood, as Andrew said, I mean, that's all in the service of freeing ourselves from them, of healing those places. That means that when they come up, you know, when we are in these reactive places, of hurt and anger and frustration and sadness and all that, we are willing to look deeply into them, right? And we understand what they are about, and we are willing to take that massive leap to do it differently. Okay, but I'm sure you all understand that. So what I'd like to do this week is to join everybody else, because when we decided to do this 6 months journey on letting go of egocentricity and moving toward this selflessness, I asked a number of members, I solicited topics. You know, just what would be good topics? Because like in a number of the other sanghas, I only come once a month and give a Dharma talk. Other members give the talks. Here I come several times a month, but other members give the talks when I'm not here. So sort of we'd be all on the same page. I wanted to generate a list of topics that people could choose. So I got back an incredible list of topics. talks, which we winnowed down and then we sent out to all the people who were going to be giving the talks when I wasn't here. But then I thought, well, let me give some of those talks too, because I was kind of intrigued by some of the topics that people have chosen. Can everybody hear me? Is this all working good? So I especially like this one. It is grow up, get real, connect with life. There's good energy behind that one. You know, no equivocation. Grow up, get real, connect with life. So let me spend a few minutes talking about that, and then we can, at the end, perhaps talk about it, take questions. So I like that first one, grow up. You know, in the in that quote that I love from Shantideva, from his text, The Way of the Bodhisattva, again, you know, it's the classic text on really living a life of love and service. Yeah, he was an 8th century Indian master. And it's all in verse. In that verse, he says, all the joy the world contains has come through wishing happiness for others. All the misery the world contains has come through wanting pleasure for oneself. Is there need for lengthy explanation? Childish beings look out for themselves. Buddhas labor for the good of others. See the difference that divides them. So I want to look... So I was struck by that with this line, grow up. Because in a certain sense, I look around, physically, we've all sort of aged over time. And actually, most of us kind of do a half-decent job of pretending that we're adults. And we may have fooled and convinced many people that we are adults. Grow up. So grow up to me refers to what is being talked about in the text, which is what does it really mean to grow up? To be a mature adult. I think that is a key piece for all of us. Because I think Andrew would not have given the talk he gave last week, right? If he wasn't aware that even though, Andrew is an adult. Can I just use you for a minute? Look at him. Does he look like an adult? He's an attorney. He's married. He has children. He owns a house. He just bought himself a new car. Right? So, to to outwardly, he certainly performs like an adult. Right? And yet he gives a talk on what? Those childish states, right, that still are very much alive in us. Right? So I think that's pointing the way. That even though outwardly many of us are grown up in the developmental sense of our culture, right? We take our step into adulthood, we establish relationships, we establish a career, we get some credit cards, we take on debt, you know what I mean? We do all the things that good adults are supposed to do in our society. Yet inwardly have we grown up? Emotionally have we grown up? Or are we still living life in a childish way? Now again, you've heard me in other talks talk quite highly of early childhood. I think there are many wonderful things about children, especially young children. But there are other characteristics of young children that are somewhat endearing in children, but less so in adults. And probably one of the prime things of being a child is being self-centered. We have a name for that. It's called narcissism. And we expect that young children are narcissistic. They only think about what? Themselves and their own needs and their own wants, and if they don't get them met, they what? They cry. Right? And if crying doesn't work, they temper tantrum. They get angry, right? Right. So we sometimes find that cute, or at least we understand it. But the expectation is what? They will grow out of it. And so many of us, I think, outwardly grow out of it, but inside, that part of us is still active. Right? And we are still living from this place where we are meeting experience much of the time from me, from I. And we are encountering experience in life, relationships, always, you know, kind of what's it that it's about me, right? How other way to say it? Everything is about me. And in my relations to everybody else, it's really all about what? Are they treating me the way I want to be treated? Are they not treating me the way I want to be treated? Are things working out the way I expect them to work out? Are things not working out the way they expect them to work out? And wherever that is, and wherever we go, that's the operating. That's in Buddhism is called childish. Right? And I think of many of us, if we look at many of our dramas, especially the dramas that occur in relationships of all types, we would see that many of our relationships are fraught with what? When we look back. At the time, we think they're all very significant and we're all very right. But when we look back, we can't help but notice what? What do we notice, Ned? What a big baby we are. What, right? We're just big babies. And we're always upset about this and irritated about that. You know what I mean? We're scared about this and worried about that. Okay. So we want to what? We want to grow up. But in a deep sense. And to me, that's really what a spiritual path, dharma, whatever spiritual path you follow, it's helping us grow up to be real adults, to mature adults. And like Shanti Deva says, childish beings only think about themselves. And he says, Buddhas work for the benefit of others. And again, we cannot elevate Buddhas or think Buddhas are just statues to bow to. Or they're these highly developed celestial beings that somehow live in another planet. No. To be a Buddha in Buddhism means to be a healthy human being. A Buddha is the exemplar of what it means to be healthy. Right? To be mature. Because a Buddha is no longer living from self-centeredness. Is no longer living by its endless concerns about what's going to happen to me. Right? What's in it for me? How are people treating me? If you could imagine your mind being totally free of that, what would that mind be like? Right? I mean, what agitates you? What disturbs your peace of mind other than that drama of self? Always, right? Self always is working on something. Right? There's always something not right. Right? There's always something somewhere that's not right, somebody not acting right, some situation not going the way it's supposed to go. And the mind is just going, right? As soon as this is okay, then it will find something else. That is its nature. So we want to grow up. And luckily, because there are these wonderful, very mature, very wise, time-tested paths to show us, to teach us how to grow up. Oh, this is what it really means to be an adult. As well as we are fortunate that we still live in a time where there still are wandering around on this earth mature beings. We call them teachers, we call them masters, who have the capacity to show us, oh, it's possible. Yeah, it is possible. This is not some, only for the few, but any normal human being. Eyes, ears, nose, mouth, you know, eats breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Goes to the bathroom on a regular basis, right? Can become a mature person, can grow up if they really want to. But to do that, we have to be willing to see the narrowness, to see the short-sightedness, the extreme emotionality, and the kind of narcissistic, self-centered way of seeing things, that when this childish self is activated, that's all that it's about. It's a childish self, right? And many of us, even though we look like adults, and even though we appear to the world as accomplished, competent adults, many of us developmentally, emotionally, right, are still functioning like children. Is that clear? We're all in this one. You know, and are we really committed to growing up, to acting like a true adult? And again, luckily we have models, wonderful models for that. So first, this person, I don't know who it was, tells us to grow up. Then the next one is get real. Right? Get real. I mean, that is so profound. Right? You know, because it really asks the question, well, what is reality? You know, what is real? What is reality? Or if we take it personally, come on, Fred, get real. That means, do I know who I really am? Right? How can I get real if I really don't know who I am? So this get real is very wonderful. It also implies that I have to stop being unreal. I need to stop being unreal. Many of us are unreal. Many of us, for whatever reason, long ago, kind of exited this true sense of who we are, this true capacity to be who we are, and to be totally at ease and okay with who we are because of all that was going on around us, all the conditioning, life situations, et cetera, et cetera. Somehow we perceived that was not good enough, or somehow we perceived that acting in different ways got our needs met better, we got love, we got this and that. So many of us early on decided, not consciously, unconsciously, that it was better not to be real, better to be unreal. And so it's sort of like we left our true self and we became some sort of social self, right? That could, and we kind of just developed these different masks, different personas, different ways of operating. Much of it in relationship to how we, you know, getting our needs met, you know, all that stuff. So we lost that sense of who we really are. And obviously the injunction to get real implies that I'm willing to really be me. And that is a meditative path of discovery. Right? I'm willing to find my way through all the unreal parts of me to touch the deepest real parts of me. And that's really what meditation is helping us do, to touch deeply the essence, the core of what we are. There is a koan in Zen that says, what was your original face before your mother was born? I don't know if you've ever heard that one. But it's really forces us to go before it all happened. Before I was born and everything began to happen. Who was I? Who was I? And this is very, this is a wonderful journey inwardly of self-discovery, which this path is about. And the other, you know, and the other part of getting real is what is a reality, right? So if I'm going to relate, if I'm going to get real, then if I'm going to be really, really who I am, and I see that journey of who am I and what am I as a process of self-discovery, it's what the path is about. The other thing is I want to go, well, what's real out here? What's real, or another way to say it is, what's really going on? Because if I don't really understand who I am and I don't understand what's really going on, wow, I'm what? I'm lost. I'm lost. I'm screwed up. Right? And if you're lost and screwed up, banging around in this life, things will happen. So it is important, you know, and one of the things that we touched on this morning in our meditation, if we want to get real, we have to understand there's a difference between our thoughts about reality and reality. So many of us never really touch life. We only touch our thoughts about life, our perceptions about life. We really aren't present to situations and people. We are just present to our thoughts, our perceptions, our ideas about who they are and who they're not and what they did and what they didn't do and who, right? All that is going on where? In reality? No, only in our own mind. So understanding what is real is very important. It's important inwardly that I really get to know who and what I really am, underneath all the conditioning, underneath all the layers. And at the same time, I really get to know what's real in life. And you know, there is no better teaching out there in terms of touching reality than the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, right? Who really showed how to use this practice of mindfulness to touch reality, right? So when you're with somebody, are you really 100% present to them? To be 100% present to somebody is not to be thinking about them, not to have any idea at all about them or yourself, but to be totally 100% open. When you are 100% open, then you have a real opportunity to touch the real experience of being with that person. And it is the same reality of when you're drinking tea, right? Now, to say I am holding a cup of tea or to say I am drinking tea, those are simply what? Words. Describers. They have, you know, they're flat. And they have nothing to do with this. This is indescribable. When you are present to what, to really what you're experiencing, there are no words for it because you are in experience. Is that? You're in experience. You're just experiencing it. You're tasting, you're touching, you're feeling, you're sensing, you're looking, you're seeing, you're hearing. And it's very simple. Right? And then we generate words. Or many of us, even as we're having the experience, we are generating words. Right? And so we're really not even having the experience, we're having the words about the experience. And we're right away commenting on it. How's it going? How's it doing? How I'm doing? Are they liking me? Not liking me? Is this what I thought it would be? Is it what I thought it wouldn't be? It tastes like this. I'm enjoying this. I'm not enjoying this. Right? All that is going on where? In our thoughts. So, this line about get real, grow up and get real, again, is wonderful. We want to get real. We want to grow up, be mature beings, and we want to live in reality. Most people do not live in reality. It's a little scary, knowing that it's scary to drive around at 70 miles an hour on the road with all these other cars when you know most people aren't in reality. I mean, right? It's just a it's amazing that we're, it's not like bumper cars out there, right? There must be something about driving that people kind of somehow stay focused enough, right? Don't get too lost in their thoughts, that more accidents don't happen. Grow up, get real. And then the last line, which really, I guess now that it sort of ties in what I've been saying, is connect with life. And that sort of ties in with what I was saying, which is there is a difference, a radical difference, between being connected with life and being connected with our thoughts about life. They're not the same. This is life. This moment. And every one of us here, in our looking, in our hearing, in our smelling, in our tasting, right? In our feeling, in our sensing, in our awareness. We are alive. Please take a moment just to note your aliveness. This is important. Each of us are alive. It's pretty incredible. It is a very different experience. Again, I'm perhaps projecting. A very different experience than the floor, the walls, the windows, the ceiling may be having. We are alive. We are aware, we're conscious, we sense, we see, we hear, right? We smell, we taste, we feel, we have emotions, we are alive. And this place right now is the only place that we are alive. We are only alive in this present. And what we think about our life, or what we call our life, is just a construct, a mental construct. That may sound fairly radical, but it is true. And anyone who is willing to look into their own experience will see the validity of what I just said. And maybe I don't need to repeat that. I think we all know what. No matter how many thoughts we have about our past, they're just stories, right? Our past is gone. It no longer exists. Right? And no matter how much we may fantasize, worry, plan for our future, it hasn't come. So even though we have a story about our life, this work of fiction that we've created about our life, this memoir, this running memoir that we're all writing, right? The truth is, our life is only in this moment. This is life. This is very important. It is very liberating. Because if you are not present to life, to your life, as it's unfolding in the present moment, but are lost in your thoughts about life, lost in the past, lost in the future, lost in all your projections, your childish thinking, everything about life, are you experiencing life? Are you connected with life? No. We are connected to these endless stories, projections, dramas, worries, ruminations, and we think that's our life. When somebody asks you, how's your life going, please tell them about how you are right now. How are you right now? Because this is your life. This is where you are alive. The other thing about connecting with life is it feels very different than being connected to past and future thinking, connected to your worries, your fears, your frustrations, your angers, your sadnesses, your losses. When you are connected with those things as simply mental events, how do you feel? How do you feel?
Stress.
But if you have no storyline that you're carrying, and you are totally present to whatever is unfolding in your life moment to moment, you will feel real. See, a lot of people don't feel real. People say that. I just don't feel real. I don't feel connected. I feel disconnected. Disconnected from my body, or disconnected from my mind, or disconnected from other people, or disconnected from life, or disconnected, you know that? And when they say that, they're speaking truth. It is only people who are disconnected from other people that could do harm to other people. When you experience your connection, your non-separation, your interbeing with other people, you want to take care of them. Right? You are present to them. You want them to be happy. You don't want to say anything to them that is hurtful, unkind. Do you? No, when you're connected. When you experience connection to your planet, which means to nature, when you are connected, you want to take care of it. Because you understand, I am connected to it. I have no life apart from it. I am this world. I am all humanity. Is that clear? So this issue of connection is very important. People don't kill other people they feel connected to. People kill people who they feel disconnected to. Right? people exploit a planet that they feel disconnected from, that they see as an object for their own satisfaction. So, connecting with life is so important. And again, I like these lines because, you know, we get lost in Dharma, and we get lost in language, and we get lost in spirituality and metaphysics, and it all seems so wonderful, but so kind of otherworldly, you know? Dharma should be real. It should help us. It's all about growing up, getting real, and connecting with life. It's funny, I had a call earlier this week. You know, we have this intensive going on. I do calls with the people. And one of the people on it was talking about they've been really working hard this week on connecting to people and interconnecting, and people at work, you know, really connecting with them. And I said something to her. I said to her, "Oh, you don't have to do that." You know, she thought she was doing something quite good. She was good practice. She was really working hard to connect with people. And I said to her, I'm sharing it with you, but I think it's such an essential, interesting way that Buddhism comes at things. See, we are already connected. You don't have to do anything to connect. We already are interconnected. We don't have to make the connection. It's the opposite. We have to stop doing all the things that are disconnecting us. It's the opposite of what we think. It's not about doing something. It's about stop doing something. Am I making myself clear? It may sound, I'm just mincing words, but it's really key. You know, because remember, the enlightenment of the Buddha, 2,600 years ago, he said, incredible. You know, I didn't have to do it. It's already here. I have this enlightened mind. Huh? That really contains all wisdom. I'm already part of this birthless, deathless, unconditioned experience of what it really means to be a human being. So in other words, he discovered what he already was, right? He thought he wasn't. He thought he was just this human being, Siddhartha, you know, who had to work very hard, to become enlightened. And in his great enlightenment was, I already was enlightened. I just didn't know it. I wasn't awake to it. So we have to stop doing all these things that disconnect us from other people, disconnect us from life. You know, all the stuff we talked about earlier, all the ways we separate, the way we judge and evaluate and criticize and label and live through thoughts, and right? When we stop doing this and we're willing to just be 100% present, we will feel it. It's already here. We are already connected. It's wireless. Maybe that's a good way to look at it. It's wireless. Now do you get it?
Yes. Oh.
We don't have to look around for the right plug, right? We don't have to look around for the right adapter. See, that's what we think our spiritual practice is. We keep reading books, you know, give me another book, hearing another teaching, you know. Just got to find the right adapter to plug into. It's wireless. It's already turned on. And we will experience it when we stop doing all this. You see, we live in this tiny little self of who we think we are. And all its dramas, its endless dramas. And its story about who it was and who it's worried it will be or who it wants to be. It's right? And it's always working. It's always working that drama. And we so identify it. We don't see all that's going on around. We don't see that our little drama is just a tiny little piece. If we come out of it, we notice what? So let's say you've been sitting here today and you got some drama working, right? Some personal drama, right? Everybody got a little personal drama they work today? Personal drama about themselves or somebody else or your relationship, you know what I mean, right? Everybody got a little bit of drama they've been working on today. When we're working that drama, we don't notice what? We don't notice each other. We don't notice we're alive and how wonderful that is. We don't notice there's so much else going on in life than my drama. When you're in the drama, life is all about what? Drama. It's all about the drama, right? And we'll play it and repeat it over and over and over and over and over again and see it from this way and that way and replay it 25,000 times, right? In the meantime, the sun is shining, the birds are singing, the sky is blue, right? But we don't see any of that. We're not connected to life. So again, why we cultivate meditation, why we cultivate mindfulness, why we cultivate concentration, why we cultivate all these practices is so we can stop doing all this stuff that in our sane moments, you know, and everybody here, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have a moment of sanity. Every now and then, you notice? Somehow, and so we good fortune, a moment of clarity, right? A moment of sanity, and we go, there is a better way. There is a better way, right? And we come out of the drama. And again, you know, we may have come out of it, and we're feeling good, and 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later, 2 hours later, another drama will try to suck us back in. So, as we strengthen over time our mindfulness, our meditation, our stability, our clarity, our capacity to experience a deeper way of being, of being alive, you will lose your taste for drama. Many of us have not lost our taste for drama. Like addicts or alcoholics, we still have a thirst on. We haven't lost our taste for that kind of life. But over time, we may lose our taste for it. Why? For all that drama, for all that emotionality, for all that. Because it is so unsatisfying. It's such an unsatisfying way to be. Especially when everyone here has the capacity of happiness, of well-being, of ease of mind. Everyone. You know. Again, that's the Buddha's enlightenment 2,600 years ago. All beings have this capacity. It is our inherent nature of our mind if we just stop doing all this other stuff. So we got to grow up, get real, and connect with life. I feel like a personal trainer or something. Talking in these little. So we have about 5 minutes. Any questions? I mean, so this is, please take these, grow up, get real, connect with life. Please, in the coming week, take, you know, that's very simple. Right? Can everybody just say to themselves, grow up? See, like this, do like this, say, grow up, Fred. I mean, but call it your own name. Grow up, Fred. Get real, Fred. Connect with life, Fred. and kind of make these our mantras in the coming week to remind us when we start going off, right? When we find ourselves disconnected, when we find ourselves acting in childish ways, when we find ourselves treating our thoughts as real, solid, giving us good information. Remind ourselves what's real. So why don't we stop here?